It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hello, happy Christmas, and welcome to Steve Bloomer's Washing the Derby County podcast for our penultimate episode of 2023. And what an end to the year the mighty Rams are having with a seventh win in our last eight, leaving poor ones Derby County still right in amongst it in the League One promotion picture. I hope you all had a restful, relaxing, prosperous Christmas Day with your families. It's Chris Parsons here for our latest episode, and it's a belated Christmas present for us all, because alongside me with plenty of festive cheer is Ollie Wright from Derby County blog. Feliz Navidad to you, my friend.
Feliz Navidad. That's probably as much as you need, isn't it? But yeah, no, Merry Christmas to everyone. Although, yeah, Boxing Day recording, which is a new one on me, I have to say. I'd normally be tuck it into an awful lot of bitters probably by now, but I've refrained on the basis that you don't really want to be sort of talking to the boring guy at the pub who's already three pints in and is convinced of his own righteousness. So I've laid off, don't worry. So if I do sound like I'm convinced of my own self-righteousness, it's just natural, not the beer talking.
Well, we're massively appreciative for you joining us. I'll cut to the chase, Ollie. What was the best thing you received this Christmas?
I got a lot of chocolate this year, and I am a bit of a fiend for fudge. For some reason, it's like, I don't know, it's like drugs to me, fudge. So everyone knows that now, so I get like lots of fudge. So that should keep me going until at least, and I'm quite good at hoarding it as well, so I'll manage to keep that'll keep me going basically probably until about Valentine's Day, I think.
You've done well there. It's quite a key parenting skill, isn't it? Like hiding sweets from your own kids.
Yes.
What's your strategy? I just put them high up in the cupboards.
To be honest. Well, for all that they are they have an intense press. They do. They're high intensity press. They've got the energy and the tenacity, but they don't have the height. So yes, absolutely. Get it on a high shelf, and you're all right. You've just got to
no physical presence.
Exactly, that's right.
Look, I've got big news. I am the proud owner of a leaf blower this year. Thank you very much. The early midlife crisis is well and truly hitting. I was delighted with that. I'm absolutely made up.
Well, happy days. Although, to be fair, it won't really come into its own, I'm guessing, until next autumn. So, but the sort of start of next season is when you'll be wielding it in anger, or will you be after the leaves early doors?
Well, there's quite a large clump. We'll talk about football soon. There's a large clump outside my front drive, but it's a leaf blower and vacuum. Wow. Ollie, is there anything it can't do? It's incredible. I for one am excited.
Oh my gosh! I wonder how Paul Warren would react to find it out. I'm sure for some reason, I just think he'd really like that. I don't know why.
He's a leaf blower guy. I bet 100% he's a leaf blower guy. I bet he loves a power tool. We'll have to find out one day. Look, Wigan Athletic were the Rams' latest victims on this fine run of form, seen off 1-0 on Boxing Day at the DW. A ground we've had quite a lot of good fortune out of recent years, if memory serves. And the winning goal came from Derby's very own Admirable Nelson. Big Curtis nodding in from a first half Tommy Barkhuizen cross. A few five-word reviews of that game to kick off. What do you make of the game? Bit of a theme here. Just loads of people with some big love for Curtis Nelson and Aaron Cashin. Sunil on X said Cashin departure could cause problems. Al Thomas said digging deep to maintain momentum. Robert De Silva said dominant, energetic, composed, defended one. Andrew Woodman said top two is in sight. Nikki B, a regular contributor on Five Word Review, said Curtis Nelson is a monster. AK said dug in superbly yet again. Tim West said should have scored more. Great result. And I'll leave you this one, Ollie, to finish off. Piru on X, who's not getting carried away in the slightest, said Nelson is the new Igor. What do you make of that one?
Wow. No, he's not. I don't think anybody will ever be the next Igor. What would you have to do to be the next Igor? I can't get my head around that.
I think you need to be more than just a head it and kick it centre back in the third tier for a start. I appreciate the sentiment. I appreciate the sentiment.
Yeah, I mean, Nelson, obviously, at the start of the season, it's funny, isn't it? Because at the start of the season, we had a really ropey little run of games where we just didn't look organised at all. And obviously, Warren tried to play a back three and it all looked very confused and obviously had to be changed pretty sharpish. He had to sort of make the big decision. And when it came to the big decision of dropping a centre back, it wasn't Nelson he dropped, it was Sonny Bradley, who was probably the sort of marquee signing of the summer and was certainly the guy who came in with the most hype and the most expectation. Nelson came in very quietly, really. It was, you know, he wasn't a big name or anything like that. It wasn't like Sonny's kind of profile. But I mean, I'd asked him, I've got a good Oxford friend, I asked him about him and he just said, I love him. And yeah, I can see why. It kind of very quickly became apparent why, because he's just so assured at the back, very calm, unruffled, very rare. Obviously, everybody makes mistakes, but he very rarely seems to put a foot or a head wrong. Composure, class, really good. You know, and alongside Aaron Cashin, those two, it just, you know, I don't want to put a hex on them, but it just doesn't feel like they're ever going to concede a goal.
Derby do currently have, and I feel I have to point this out, even though it usually jinxes us massively and we end up shipping goals left, right and centre, but we've got the best defence in the league in League One right now, 18 conceded from 22 games. And going forward, as pointed out by Alex Harker on the SPW Discord, he made the point that right now, Ollie, we're one win away, averaging 2 points a game. And in almost every season, last season notwithstanding, that usually adds up to being in the top two or very close to it. Like, you can't really ask much more of the players since the Stevenage defeat, can you, to be honest?
I feel like for quite a long time, there's been a kind of feeling of, yeah, it's getting better, but we need something to make us believe a little bit. And hopefully this game, if we can back it up with a couple more positive results in the next two, which are absolutely biblical, massive games now, then I think we'll go into the new year believing. You know, I mean, to be on a run this good at any level is very difficult. So yeah, massive credit to everyone involved. I think defensively, as we've sort of touched upon, we've just tightened up really, really well. Joe Wildsmith doesn't really tend to have anything to do. And then up front, you know, we're starting to show some quality signs, I think. I think there was some today, there was some lovely football, particularly in the first half, some nice one-touch little moves, some into play. It was nice to see. And I think it felt a far cry from the days when away fans were getting very cross and telling Paul Warren that his football was not so good, shall we say. You know, and those days feel like a long time ago. I remember, I'm old enough to remember on social media people posting worn out and things like that. So it feels like that kind of element has definitely been quite quiet of late, which is nice. I think overall, I still feel like today was a convincing win. It really was. I don't think Wigan were very good. But we were clearly better than them. And that's what we've wanted to see. We've wanted to see a Derby County side really sort of throwing its weight around, because we're a big fish at this level. And I think we all want to see us play like that and really dominate teams and put up, you know, really sort of, you know, get on top of them. And that's what we did today. You know, that first 20 minutes that we never let them out. And I think, well, I know at half time it was 8-0. So that is, to go away and restrict a team to literally nothing is pretty good going. So yeah, I think this was a very impressive win today. I know it was only 1-0. I know we've won some 4-0s and 3-0s and stuff like that. And we could have made it easier for ourselves. I mean, the miss by Tom Barkay's and right at the start of the second half, I still can't quite get my head around. But overall, it was a thoroughly merited 3 points. And that's very, very satisfying to say. And coming on such a good run, it really does build momentum.
A really interesting contrast as well to the opening day when Wigan turned us over, and a lot of people had Wigan down to, you know, to be in amongst it, even with the points deduction. And we said a few times ourselves on the pods, like, oh, Derby are in X position and they're still Wigan, you know, they could still do something. But like, yeah, for large parts of the game, we looked so superior to them today. But having said all that, it was a very stressful last 20 minutes, wasn't it? Let's have it right. It wasn't really the relaxing, chilled, festive experience I was really hoping for on Boxing Day. But there were those periods of play when it was just one of them where every header that Fozzie booms out or Cash in or Nelson feels like a huge sigh of relief, where you just ride the wave for a little bit longer. They were all fantastic, but clearly Nelson and Cashin will get the plaudits. But how good was that defensive display from you generally, do you think? Because they're forming a really formidable partnership, aren't they, those two?
Yeah, well, obviously we've talked about the centre-backs, but once you add Ryan Iambi back, and we have missed him, I think, even though we've still been picking up the results. But we conceded a couple of daft goals that I doubt we would have conceded if Iambi had been a right back. And I think those two are both incredibly solid. I think Iambi and Forsyth, I think just the back four in general, I think you're going to struggle to get a better back four at this level. I'd be shocked if there was one. And the defensive record really kind of just proves that sort of thesis, if you like. I think it's worth pointing out that I think we conceded 9 goals in the first 7 games. So do the maths. We've only conceded something like 16 in total. So we've barely conceded a goal in months, which is incredible. So yeah, the back four is the bedrock for everything. I think Fozzie, obviously, you know, he stuck with us through thick and thin and generally thin. And, you know, despite all the madness and chaos, he was always there and, you know, always reliable when fit. And he's now, fingers crossed, again, Hex in it, but he's been fit for a long time, hasn't he? And he's just been Mr. Dependable at left back. And you never worry too much, you know, when he's there, because, all right, he's not the quickest anymore. And, you know, but he can still put in a fizz in a decent cross. And he actually scored. I mean, he scored a good goal today, getting in the box. And it was a shame that it got chalked off, unfortunately. But, it, you know, he was in the box and he is impacting at both ends of the pitch.
You've got to give him credit, haven't you? Because, like, he doesn't really seem to have changed his playing style at all in the 10 years he's been at the club. Like, really. Like, if you showed his clips in isolation and him getting up and down, whipping in those crosses, popping up at set pieces, like, you know, getting on the end of stuff in the opposition penalty area, you wouldn't really be able to tell if it was 2014 or 2019 or 2023, would you? Like, he's just been absolute Mr. Consistent 7 out of 10 for a decade.
Yeah, he knows his strengths and weaknesses. He doesn't try and do things he can't do. He's very left-footed, obviously, so he uses that. He plays on that, and he simply keeps it simple. My dad always used to say, do the simple things, do them well, and that's what he tries to do. And I think you could kind of say that of Iambi a little bit as well. You know, he's a very solid defender. Iambi's obviously got that bit more pace, which is extremely helpful in terms of sort of recovering, because he will go forward, but he's got the pace to get back. Yeah, absolutely. Like, kind of all of those four deserve massive credit, I think, for the way that they've performed. And as a unit, I think they're really coherent. And, you know, given that I think we know that one wanted to go with a back three, actually to have developed a back four this excellent, I think is good pragmatic coaching. Okay, it didn't quite work with the back three, but we've got the players to do, you know, do something a little bit different and do it really well.
Yeah, and on Nyambi as well, loved the Christmas Day tweets. I shouldn't really have been on Twitter on Christmas Day, but, you know, the food was in the oven and I was just bored on my phone in the kitchen. New contracts for him until 2025. I do have issues with them tweeting a video of a contract under a Christmas tree. Can't really see a situation in which that would happen, but, you know, I'm nitpicking. What a signing. Yeah. What a signing he is. Like, I mean, I paid really close attention to him today, and he's just such a solid, sharp, consistent, good operator, and amazing, really, that we've got him in this division. The only issue, clearly, is him going to the African Cup of Nations in the new year. I think I saw a post saying that his last game will be Peterborough on New Year's Day, and then then AFCON starts on January the 13th and goes on to February the 11th. So if, and I believe it's quite unlikely, Namibia do get to the final of AFCON, he misses 7 games, I think, which are Fleetwood away, Burton at home, Lincoln away, Reading away, Cheltenham at home, Charlton away, and Shrewsbury at home. On the plus side, I guess, Ollie, none of those games are really against the big beasts in League One, as it were. But I do just, you know, we're not going to have him. And I do just worry a bit about Joe Ward at right back, especially with the, if he, you know, drops the sort of clangers he did against Lincoln with that penalty he gave away.
Oh my God, yeah. Yeah, that didn't inspire confidence at all. I think it's a funny one, isn't it? Because Wilson and Ward, I guess you would both call them wing backs, really. Obviously, we recruit them again for a back three. So neither of them are what you call old-fashioned, you know, full backs, are they? They're both basically forward-thinking players. So what you gain in a little bit of flair and maybe a little bit of impact in the final third, you may be losing that solidity of Nyambi. So neither of them are going to give you as reassuring a presence at the back, that is for sure. But I think Kane Wilson is a massive plus this season. Probably playing further forward suits him a little bit more. So we're going to have to find a way of making that work, I think. I'm struggling off the top of my head to think if we've got somebody else who could slot in at right back. So one of them's going to have to do the job and do it well. You know, ultimately, I guess if they go forward, combine really well as a duo and create some goals, then hopefully that will sort of more than make up for any little ricks. I mean, obviously, yeah, we're all upset, obviously, because Ward made a very poor decision diving in for that penalty, that tackle. And in a game, and then there you go. It was like Lincoln hadn't really had a chance or a kicker that I can recall. We'd been very, very solid, very, very happy with the way that we played. And then all of a sudden you do that right on the half-time whistle. And it just knocked the air out of everything. But fortunately, Wilson then came on, didn't he? And sort of helped turn the game in our favour with his trickery and actually a headed goal, which is the biggest shock ever, because, you know, for all of his like twinkle toes, I wasn't expecting him to score a header kind of ever, really. So that was amazing. But yeah, I think those two, obviously they have very, very different attributes to Nyambi, so they're gonna be, we will be a slightly different side without him. Hopefully we'll carry enough threat going forward to sort of make up for any loss of sort of balance at the back.
Funny with the Lincoln game, like, was quite bizarre to see Wilson popping up on the edge of that cross. And when it, you know, when the ball went in and someone celebrated, I did not expect to see him wheeling away. Also really enjoying those Mendes Lang outside of the foot crosses. Again, Phil on our last podcast flagged it as he got the assist with one at Port Vale and then chucked in another one the week after that. Such a simple little change to his game that is really, really reaping rewards, isn't it? Often it's, you can overthink football, can't you, sometimes, when it's often just a case of trying a different technique.
Well, I think he's one of the players we've got who's very much one-footed, so he's just found a way of working around that. You know, I think, you know, Fozzie wouldn't try and do much with his right foot. Mendes doesn't try and do much with his left. Probably there's a few other players who are in the same boat, really. I think Barkay's, and probably today, you know, couldn't score that goal because he's not really got a left foot to speak of, you know. If he's got any sort of left foot, that's a very straightforward finish. So, again, it's, well, working around your limitations, I guess. But, yeah, for Mendes, those scoop outside of the foot crosses are pretty ace to see. They're pretty amazing. It's a very, it's a real good workaround for the fact that he's got no left foot.
We'll take it all day long. Look, before we go to part two, I wanted to ask you about Erin Cashin. Absolutely majestic today and really good against Lincoln as well, actually. One incredible goal line block or last-ditch tackle, I think, he put in against Lincoln, which basically literally saved us from conceding. And yeah, header after header today. He was spraying about a lot of those big diagonals and booming balls, which I'm not always a massive fan of. But look, it comes down to this, Ollie. Next month, we've got a battle on our hands to keep him. We all know that Brighton came in for him in a few months ago, put in a couple of bids, didn't quite work out, went down to the wire. So I don't know. I just wonder how you think it's going to shake out. Because, I mean, it's that classic age-old dilemma for Cashin, really. Like, look, there is going to be interest. I don't think any Derby fan can deny that. So for Cashin, it's like, look, stay at Derby, sign a new deal, play every single week, every minute of every game, carry on developing, carry on improving, as he has done. So let's not forget just how far he's come as a player in a couple of years, and potentially get a promotion under your belt, you know, and everything that comes with that. Or alternatively, you do make the move, you obviously get a big salary bump, probably triple your wages, you play with better players, in better facilities, under better coaches, but every game you only get, what, a few minutes at the most. You maybe not even make the squad, possibly loaned out again. There's no guarantee that you're going to slot straight in. And maybe, if I'm being cynical and with my Derby hat on, you see your career stagnate a bit. I don't know. I mean, how do you see it? How do you see it shaking out with Cashin in January?
I've never really felt realistically that we've got much chance of hanging on to him, to be honest. I just feel like, you know, once you've got Premier League interest in a player, you know, how would you convince them not to go? I think it would be, you know, almost foolish of him not to, because, you know, the opportunity only comes once. You know, you're talking about potentially life-changing. I know, obviously, he'll be doing all right for himself at Derby, but it's not the same going to a Premier League club. I just think if Brighton have, and I'm sure they will have, I don't see why they wouldn't have, if Brighton have maintained their interest in him, then almost certainly he'll come back and I would have thought he'll go. I know a lot of people have hoped that if that does happen, we could get a loan back, but that, again, that depends. I mean, they might not particularly want him to come and play in League One. They might want to see him in the Championship. So, you know, I think clearly the interest is real. We know there was a reasonable bid, wasn't there? And it didn't happen. And I think, yeah, I just don't see how we can get him to stay. I think, you know, he'd be taking a gamble, you know, on us getting promoted, which may or may not happen. And then in the summer, you know, maybe the opportunity's gone. So I'm not giving myself much hope that he'll stay. I feel like he'll go. Obviously, I'm desperate to see him stay because I love watching him play. He's a joy to watch. I do like his passing. His progressive passing is amazing. Like the way he'll pick the ball up and knock it through the lines with accuracy. And he doesn't have the, you know, he has the bravery to try an expansive pass. And yes, they don't work every time. But I think he is such an asset. And he's surely miles the best defender operating at this level. So he's too good for the level. I think the same is the case of Max Bird. And you talk of career stagnating, obviously, the, you know, if you stay at Derby, you know, does your career stagnate, you know, without Derby hats off? You know, should they be playing at a higher level? Both those players, yes, they should. Could they do it quite quickly? Well, Cash, Premier League, don't know. Championship, yes. Bird, Championship, yes. So they're certainly playing below the level. So it becomes really hard. And obviously, there's, you know, we're all desperate to see us get promoted this season. Maybe the way that Bird and Cashin end up contributing to that actually is to put millions of pounds into the bank. I don't know. And my heart wants them both here forever, to be honest. Because, of course, you know, I just absolutely love them both as players. I think they're fantastic. And, you know, we have given them the opportunities, obviously getting relegated. I mean, you know, Aaron Cashin, a couple of seasons ago, I saw him play at Notts County in a friendly. And he was like a, you know, absolute baby at that time. And I did hear from one of my sources close to the club, Biscuit and all that, but I was told reliably that he was very nearly released. And there was a last minute change of heart to give him new terms. But at one point he was gonna be released. So we almost lost him entirely, if what I'm told is true. So it's just been a remarkable development over the last couple of seasons, from, and especially given that he's only, well, I don't know how tall he is, but he seems very short for a centre back, but that does not have any impact on his game at all. You know, he's brave. He goes and wins the ball. He seems to get up, even though he's not the tallest. Tackling, spot on. You know, there's very little wrong with his game, is there? So I think he's going to get better and better and better. How old is he? I've lost track of how old he is, but he's still not very old. So to be playing as a centre back week in, week out at any level at such a young age is testament to just how good he is, and he's going to get better.
I can confirm that he's 22. Not because I knew that, because I've just Googled it.
but think about Matt Clark, just as a sort of play devil's advocate to myself.
I was obviously thinking about Matt Clark, funnily enough, actually, yeah, because he's a classic example, isn't he, of what can happen. But I guess it just comes down to how good that player is in the first place. Like,
but you've got to back yourself, haven't you? I mean, if you're a professional footballer, then you do, you know, you're going to have a lot of confidence in your own ability. You have to. So I think if the opportunity comes, I think you're going to want to take it. And also, another factor is his Republic of Ireland. You know, they're not going to want to see him play in League One. They would want to see him play in minimum champ. So, you know, they want to, you know, if he's got international ambitions, which obviously he will have, then again, he's got to think about that too.
I'm not completely resigned to him going, but I'm very, very fearful. But, you know, look, stranger things have happened. Maybe he will stay. Maybe he really, really loves Moor Farm. Who knows? And Paul Warren's sense of humour. Well, I'll see how it shakes out in the next month. Look, we're going to come back in a second on SPW. But before we do, over on the Patreon this month, Tom was over at the DW today, and he's churned out a fantastic match day video diary from the 1-0 win. So here's a little snippet of his very loud, prepare yourselves, reaction to Derby's winning goal on Boxing Day.
Derby score! Corner over the right hand side. Ball comes back out to the left to Tom Barkhausen. Cross into the box. Brilliant header. Derby lead 1-0. 18 minutes gone.
Lovely old stuff there. So I'll be putting that one together very soon, and that'll be on our Patreon in video form, so head over to patreon.com/Steve Bloomers Washing.
Hi, I'm Nathaniel Mendes-Lang, and you're listening to Steve Bloomers Washing.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
One shot the target here, and he's beaten Marshall to it. It must be. It is. And it's the little Italian again. Against the run of play, but they'll accept it. And it was Marshall's mistake that allowed one chop to make the cross, and Baiano did the rest.
There we go then, from Leicester away in 97-98, I think that one, or 96-97, one of the two, from the SBW video vault. Ollie, We've got one more game, biblically big, as you've said, of 2023, Oxford away on the 29th. But 2023 is basically wrapped up for Derby County. I did a few maths, did a few sums. 1-23, drew 9, lost 12 in the calendar year. I mean, basically meaningless information because it was over the course of two seasons. But let's do a little best and worst. It's been a funny old year in some respects. The classic heroic Derby County failure at the end of the season in not reaching the playoffs, but plenty of good results along the way. I was looking back over it and the results we had, I still think the best moment for me was Port Vale away in January. Yeah. It was so long ago, but I just think I just remember how I thought at the time, and it was part of the big run. And I just thought, you know, look, this could be the game. Like, I really thought that Derby team had something when we won that game in those circumstances. And it just looked absolutely amazing beyond that goal. We've talked about it quite a few times on the podcast. So that was probably my highlights. I mean, sticking 4 past Peterborough earlier this season, that was up there for me, like, because I've never really seen us do well at that ground. Blackpool was great. And then worst moments, I think it comes down to like a 2-week period for me, which included getting gubbed by Barnsley away and then losing to Plymouth about 10 days later. So getting smacked, getting done in by Barnsley 4-1. So getting hammered and then losing to Plymouth with a dive. So I just think that period in like late February, early March was just when I just sort of thought, yeah, you know what? I'm not sure this team have got enough about them to either luck or ability or physicality or all three to make it into the playoffs or do more. So that was quite a crushing couple of games. Yeah. What were your highs and lows from the year that was?
Well, obviously the Port Vale game, I mean, I asked my buddies on Patreon and pretty much unanimously they came back with Vale, because you just don't see comebacks like that really ever. It was wild. And the funniest thing about it was, obviously we have a WhatsApp group and some of the guys were there, and one of my friends, Jimmy, had sent a message. I think it was quite near the end, wasn't it? And obviously Vale, I can't remember exactly when Vale scored, but about 15 minutes from the end, he sent a message saying, just get me out of here. I just need a teleporter. Just get me out of this ground. Get me out of this shit old ground, and like just out of Burslem and this end of the world place we're in. Just get me out of here. And then obviously we had to cancel his teleporter, which was, you know, it's very much what he was not expected. So yeah, I think when you get writhing away ends like that, you know, it's something to see. So yeah, I think I've been lucky enough to be in one or two bedlam away ends, as we all have. And by the way, I loved that audio clip from your man, was it Tom? It was absolutely excellent. That put a massive grin on my face. There's nothing like it. So yeah, so I think the Vale one, from a sort of result and craziness perspective, was a cracker. I think I would say in my highlights reel, not really, I was struggling to think of many games, but I think just generally watching David McGoldrick, I think was one of my big ones. That just, it's just his unreal ability, basically. It was like, it's kind of like unearthly skills, you know. He's like no pace, and yet he could still glide past half a, and it's, I'm not even sort of, you know, waxing lyrical here, he just could just take the ball away from three players and didn't seem, you know, without changing pace. It wasn't like a Mendes Lang where he's just, you know, it's all about those raw physical kind of prowess. It's all about his just technique and just gliding around the pitch.
Exeter away for me was actually a low-key ditzy highlight. The free kick that he smashed in late on, but I think that just really summed up his like vision and calmness and class, you know. He was an absolute pleasure to watch, wasn't he? Yeah.
He really was, and it was a hammer blow for him to go. But I think fortunately we seem to have got to a point where we, you know, we've got a decent team in his absence. But which kind of leads me on, actually, I could go on about Dizzy all day, but I won't. It kind of leads me on to, I was going to say about recruitment, actually, because we've talked about Curtis Nelson, who obviously has been an absolutely terrific signing. But also you could talk about Kane Wilson, you could talk about Ryan Embe. You're talking about an improvement, a massive improvement in the quality of the players that we're bringing in. Gradually it's getting better. I'm sure there's, you know, to use Paul Warren's words, honking signings will be in there as well. And, you know, not every signing's come off, that they never do. But generally, the signings have been pretty sensible. They've been decent quality for the level. You could also see the sense in majority of the signings, you know, and there's more to come from some of them for sure, like Tyrese John-Jules, for example, hopefully. So, yeah, I think generally that is a real kind of tick in a box for me, that the recruitment feels like it's getting to a point where it's sensible and we're going to be bringing in better players. And I think January obviously is a massive opportunity because we need a couple more in. Even if Cashin and Bird magically didn't go, we'd still need a couple in. So we've got to get the right ones. But I feel like we're getting that right more, which is really important. And I did have a last one, which has just completely gone out of my head. But overall, I think just the positive of this year in general has been the complete lack of chaos. I think the stability that has come back to the club, which was all over the place for years and obviously very nearly died. So I think to be in a position where we are in the luxury of the luxurious position of just being able to talk about football, not having to learn new words like amortization and God knows what else legal terminology we were sort of dragged through by Quantumar, UR.
Do you know what? That's one of the most stressful parts of admin for me, like trying to get my head around this legalese stuff that there was no need for me to ever understand. You know, all of us were just thrust into a world of terms that we just didn't have to have any knowledge of. And I'm so glad that I don't have to take up any brain space trying to understand those concepts anymore.
No, we just rock up at Pride Park or we go away, and we just go enjoy looking forward to the game. And, you know,
I barely understand football, let alone, you know, let alone
exactly.
League leagues.
Exactly. That's not, you know, that's it. It's like, you know, there's 100, we would, you know, presented with these 100 page, you know, dense legal judgments, you know, and then we're sort of like, you know, we're almost getting to the point where, you know, the sports lawyer Nick DeMarco needs his own bloody squad number. You know, it's just ridiculous. So that for that to be receding into the background as a presence in Derby County history and his saga, I think now we're in a calmer place, and that is the kind of situation from which you can build a decent club. And we will get back to the Championship sooner rather than later. It will happen. And because when Derby County is reasonably well run, it has to be at least in the Championship at least. So we'll get there. And I think generally the 2023 has not been a sensational year. It's not been a terrible year. I think the stats you pointed out, the calendar year results, I think is useful, because actually recently I heard about Chelsea had only got like something like 42 points in the calendar year and only won back-to-back games twice, which is absolutely insane when you can, you know, the money that's been lavished. And that points to a wider problem. Whereas when the Derby sort of, you did that sort of number crunching, Derby had won more than half the games, I think. So, you know, we're winning games. We're in an okay shape. We've not come down in a mess. You know, we've come down stabilised and now pushing back up. So I think actually that shows that it's been an overall, without being sensational, without being stellar, without being spectacular in any way, really, unless Didzy was banging in hat-tricks, you know, it's been a good year.
I'd agree. Yeah, not a vintage, but no, a passable year. And I think in terms of recent history, we're all absolutely happy with that. Look, speaking of recent history, you've written another book, haven't you? Coming Home. I've had a bit of a read of it myself, I've read your two previous ones as well. It's a really interesting one, really, because you've chronicled the Mel Morris years twice before in the Tens and Nervous volumes 1 and 2. But this one was a different format, really, like much more personal and some very clear nods and passages relating to your own mental health caused by the administration process as well. I mean, what was the inspiration behind Coming Home then, and how hard was it to put to paper those sort of mental challenges that you faced?
So in the background, I moved back to the East Midlands from I used to live in Manchester, which is an amazing city, and then moved out to West Yorkshire with my wife, and we lived right at the top of the Peak District. And eventually COVID obviously hit, and we realized that we felt incredibly isolated up there and we wanted to come home. So decision was made to move back to Leicester, which is where my wife's from. And we moved back to Leicester in February 2021. So one of the many benefits of that for me was thinking, oh, well, I can get a season ticket once we're allowed to go back. So I'm thinking, okay, so I can get myself a season ticket. But then the start of the season came around and I couldn't get a season ticket because they weren't on sale. And we weren't allowed to get a season ticket because the club was in such a state that they weren't allowed to put them on sale. So, yeah, so coming home in the sense that obviously literally coming home, but also it felt like coming home. Walking to Pride Park always feels like, and walking to the baseball ground did too. Every time it always feels like a sort of homecoming in a way. So there was that element to it. There was also England getting to the final of the European Championships, which immediately brought up the Badil and Skinner song. And then obviously England lost, so that didn't quite work out. I'd moved back to Leicester, not Derby, so again, not quite coming home. And then also I couldn't get a bloody season ticket. So it was like kind of, it was a strange quasi coming home, if that makes any sense at all. So it felt like all these things of trying to get home. I feel like we wanted to get home. We wanted to come home. And then we were sort of, you know, of all the seasons, you know, this is the season when we get plunged into administration. So the next thing you know, you're kind of like this existential threat comes up. And unfortunately, in the background, and I think it's important to stress a couple of things, really. A, the book is chiefly about Derby County, not my anything else. But obviously, we weave in these elements. The mental health problems I had weren't triggered by Derby County related problems, but it didn't help. It really didn't help. I just felt like this period of the club's history, and I will keep writing about the club's history, but this particular period, I just felt like it was impossible to write about it without also writing about myself personally, because it was deeply personal. And I know, because I spoke to so many, like my friends, guys on the WhatsApp, the Patreon WhatsApp, even just on open social media, people were pouring their hearts out. We all felt it. We all felt it very, very deeply indeed. We all knew. It brought it into the sharpest possible focus what this football club meant to us, to our lives, to the rhythm of our lives. You know, it's everything to us. And so I didn't feel like I could write a book about Derby County and administration and at risk of, you know, extinction without writing about my dad, who is a South Stand nutter and is like, he stands right under the scoreboard. So if you ever see the scoreboard on Sky Sports, you'll probably see my old man up there. So he's up there, you know, and then obviously writing about my little lad, because, you know, you've got kids, Chris, and I'm sure anybody with kids will feel like, well, this is something I'm hopefully going to pass on to them if they've got the vaguest interest. Well, all of a sudden it's like, well, am I even going to have a club to pass on to Gene? You know, what do I do? You know, like, I'm not going to take him to see Leicester, for God's sake. So, you know, it made... You know, football's always been, you know, it's the old saying, isn't it, about it's more important than life and death. It's not just a game, is it? It's so fundamental to our lives as it's crucial to us. So I just didn't feel like I could write just about Derby when so much was at stake. And so, yeah, so I did, you know, write about my relationship with my dad, which, I mean, my relationship with my dad is wrapped up in football. You know, he'll ring me up after a game that we've lost. He won't ring me if we've won. And people might relate to this. It's a bit like the phone in Raider Derby. Nobody ever rings up if we won.
If it's going well. Yeah.
Exactly. But if we've lost, he'll ring me up and he'll have a 15-minute vent. And then he'll be like, so how are you? And it's like, yeah, and I always know I can just message him about the game, anything, you know, like anything else. It's like, oh yeah, it'll sort itself out. But we, the point I'm making is cross generations, across every barrier you could think of, it's the one thing that brings us all together. And that's why the 10,000 strong march, you know, was so important. And, you know, so I think it was just, maybe it's a one-off. I don't know. I might not try and become the new Nick Hornby or something. And like, you know, and I'm certainly not going to do like tell-all confessional autobiographies and stuff. And I don't intend to have any further, you know, mental health issues. I'm absolutely, you know, very fortunately, I feel 100% fine these days. You know, I've got phenomenal support. So I'm very fortunate with that. But yeah, maybe I won't ever write a book like this again. I don't know. It might just be a capsule of a moment in time. I think it felt important to me that the impact of potentially losing the club was documented.
I think, you know, look, the reason it's a unique book is because you're chronicling how you felt at the time, and people will look, Derby fans will look back on that period and frame it through the prism of how it made them feel at the time. Like, and this book isn't just like a sort of what happened in X season, like match 2-1 win, match 3-4-1 loss or whatever. It's like, it does really bring home the emotions that we felt, like the anxiety and the uncertainty and the helplessness. You know, I sat on my sofa during the worst times of that and sort of said to my wife, like, you know, it's another bloody statement that Derby put out. Like, I don't know if I might ever have a club in a few weeks' time. And sort of fretting when I was trying to get to sleep, waiting for something on Twitter, and then fretting as soon as I woke up and getting my phone straight away and the doom scrolling. And I think it's really important to crystallize how you felt, because it's how a lot of other people felt. But no, look, I think the most important question is from this book, Ollie, have you won the battle to convince Gene to support Derby and not Leicester?
Yeah, I think so. He's still too little. I did a poll because I wanted to sort of reassure myself what sort of age people started going to games. And people said in general, the poll was pretty convincing, actually. It was 6 to 10 was okay. When people started going to games. Okay. So he's 5. So at the moment, he is too little, in my judgment. I have taken him to the King Power to see Leicester v Derby under 21s, and he did 45 minutes. They just ask about everything. So you sort of like, you have to strip it right back to the very fundamentals. Like, why? Who's that? Why are they doing that? Like, why does a goalkeeper wear a different colour? Yeah, everything. You have to explain everything, to every element to him. And after a point, they get exhausted with all the questions they're asking, I think. So it's a lot to take in.
I had that today as well. I was like, if you can picture the scene, I was like watching the second half of the Wigan game and like what sort of watching it through my fingers in the last 20 minutes when we're hanging on a bit for a 1-0 win. And my 4-year-old daughter was sat next to me saying, Daddy, who's that man with the bag? Oh, that's the physio. Who's the man in yellow? That's our goalkeeper. What's his name? He's called Joe Wildsmith. Okay. Daddy, does the king watch football matches? So I was, you know, having to hold it together, not to lose my, you know, not to lose things there. But if people want to buy the book, and I saw literally, you'll be pleased to hear this, one of our patrons got it for Christmas. So that's another sale in the bank. Cha-ching. What's the best place to get it from?
Yeah, it's if you go on my ex artist, formerly known as Twitter, there's a pinned tweet with the links. They're self-published, so they're via Amazon's publishing service. You know, it's the evil empire and all that, but it facilitates it. So yeah, so if you go onto the ex Twitter, which is twitter.com/Derby County Blog, you get the links there. Or if you go on www.derbycountyblog.com, you should find the link from there as well. So you can pick it up that way.
Lovely. Coming home from Ollie. Fantastic stuff. So do make sure you check it out. We check in on this every so often just before we go, Ollie. 11 points watch, an important topic for most Derby fans. Some people don't care. I care. Yeah. And I'll continue to care about this because it's just part of our history, whether we like it or not. It looks like it's gone again this season. It's about to go. For a few minutes today, actually, it had gone because Sheffield United were winning. But then they lost. So they're back on 9 and rock bottom. But they're going to beat it at some point. And it happens every single season, doesn't it? Like, we have the same conversation. It's literally an ongoing Twitter thread that I update every year. Like, Norwich, could they do it? Nottingham Forest, could they do it? Huddersfield, could they do it? Burnley, could they do it? Sheffield United, could they do it? Burnley again, could they do it? And so it's not going to happen again. It never does happen. I actually got to the point recently where I asked our followers on social a world event which is probably going to happen before a Premier League team gets 11 points or fewer. Some of the responses here we had, Andy Margett said, Mel Morris will repay everyone he owes money to in full before anyone else gets 11 points. Ryan said, Derby will get over £1 million for an academy product before anyone gets 11 points. A bit close to the bone, that one. And Mick Yates said, the Titanic will emerge unscathed from the Bermuda Triangle before any team ever gets fewer than 11 points. It's just not going to happen, is it, in our lifetime?
I was foolish enough to hope that Sheffield United might be dysfunctional enough, and they're not. So I think that demonstrates it. They came into this season, you know, manifestly not good enough. Obviously, you know, manager not really comfortable, squad looking pretty ropey, sold the best players, didn't replace them. It was looked like a recipe for, well, it was certainly a recipe for relegation, possibly a challenger for our status. But it looks like
they've had Willasula up front for half their games this season. It wasn't even good enough for us, and they still managed 9 points. I think that speaks volumes, doesn't it?
Exactly. I think you will never get it was a constellation of cock-ups, and just, you know, that we obviously, what you'd need, the recipe you'd need would just be, oh well, there's no such recipe. It was such a one-off season, because you will never again get those circumstances coming together to make something so bad. You know, every decision had to be wrong, and it was every single decision, you know, right from the minute we got promoted with Davis gobbing off, engineering his dismissal, signing dreadful players in the summer and moaning that he didn't have more money to buy more dross, getting himself sacked, getting Paul Jewell in, you know, Jewell then dismantling the inept team so that he could bring in a bunch of guys who couldn't have given a flying monkeys, you know, and were just literally, it was almost a weird, like, I don't know if you remember, there was one year when Doncaster Rovers had turned their team into an experiment where basically, like, they got an agent involved and he brought in all these free agents who were sort of big names. And the idea was they were putting themselves in the shop window. So all of a sudden you had like Pascal Chimbonda and El Hadj Diouf playing for Doncaster.
I do remember
the Championship.
That, yeah.
And it
yeah.
went horribly, horribly, horribly wrong, and they got relegated. And it was like, yeah, we had a similar sort of situation where we had all these guys come in on short-term contracts who were kind of there on the basis that they were being in the shop window or something like that, but they weren't there because they cared, and they weren't, there was no team spirit, there was no ethos.
Are you trying to tell me that Lauren Robert and Hossam Ghali didn't bleed Derby County in that season?
You know, well, I know Hossam's dad was from Chad and you know, but you know, yeah, exactly. It was a mess, you know. You ripped out the bait, you know. There were very few good players in the team anyway. There was obviously Stevie Howard and Matt Oakley, and that's about it really, wasn't it? And they got rid of them, so then we were screwed. So yeah, I can't see how it, I mean, it possible, you never know, but like, how could anybody ever come up A, that unprepared, and B, then somehow manage to drain away anything that was like promotion worthy any in the first place? You know, I think if Sheffield United can kind of quite comfortably get past it, it's going to be a long time before anybody's that bad again.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Championship table now, and the teams in the top six have all got solid recent Premier League experience. So, yeah. You know, look, let's wait till August, and then we'll all pretend that we think it's going to happen again, and we'll take it from
well,
there.
One thing I would say is, obviously, some people probably would have looked at Luton and thought, oh, well, maybe Luton. But what they've demonstrated is, actually, if you go up with a decent, not, you know, they're never going to have the world's, you know, greatest players, they're never going to have Mo Salah up front or whatever, but you know, they've gone up with a plan, you know, a squad that believed, an ethos, togetherness, all that stuff, you know, everything about the club is positive, you know, and no, they probably won't stay up, but they're not going to embarrass themselves, you know, because they've gone up with a clear identity, sense of who they are. And obviously in that season, Derby County did not have that. And that was why we were so inept. But yeah, I think that's a demonstration as well of what is possible, actually. You know, if you've got a club in the right state, you can transcend, you know, you can go beyond your so-called limitations, because football is so stratified now. I mean, you just mentioned there, you know, the top clubs in the Championship, you would expect them to be former Premier League clubs with big budgets and parachute payments. So there is that stratification. But if you're well run, you've got the right people in the right roles, and you've got everybody pulling, then you can still do it, just about. You can still do it. I don't think Luton will survive, but I would love them to. And I'm really glad that they've already sort of waltzed past 11 points. And I think, you know, I'd love, obviously it'd be fantastic if they put a great run together and got above Forest. Let's hope they can do that.
It's, wise words to finish with. I think if Derby County can be run in similar circumstances and get our act together, then maybe, you know, maybe we can emulate Luton. God, imagine saying that 5 years ago. Ollie, look, it's been a pleasure. I do appreciate your time. I'm heading off to Fleetwood in the new year. That's my next Derby County trip. Very excited about that. Hoping to get to Lincoln as well. So let's wish the boys luck for Oxford. Two massive games, Oxford away, Peterborough at home, to finish 2023 and start 2024. Thanks a lot for joining us. Onwards and upwards, eh?
Cheers.